are listening to the Drew and Jay podcast, brought to you by 21 Media Productions. He is Drew Lasker. I am Jay Marriott. This is episode 10. We hit the coaching circuit this week with head coach of the in-form Sheffield Sharks, Atiba Lyons. But before we get into this episode, let's share a little message from our sponsor. We've teamed up with an incredible basketball clothing brand that's going to take your style and game to a whole new level.
That's right, guys. Get ready to elevate your passion for basketball, both on and off the court, because we're proud to introduce our collaboration with Always Ballin', the brand that's redefining basketball fashion.
That's right, folks. Always Ballin' isn't just a clothing brand. It's a lifestyle. Whether you're shooting hoops at the park, catching a game with your friends, or just want to rock some seriously stylish shreds, Always Ballin' has got you covered. From premium jerseys to trendy streetwear, they've got it all. And here's the best part. Not only are they our podcast official merchandise partner, but they also creating some exclusive Drew and Jay Show gear that you won't find anywhere else.
So get ready to rep your love for basketball like never before with Always Ballin' top-notch apparel. And stay tuned because we got some exciting giveaways and promotions coming your way soon. So until then, keep listening to us here at the show for the latest on all things basketball. And remember, when it comes to style and passion for the game, we are always ballin'.
Okay, here we go. Let's welcome this week's guest, Coach Atiba. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
And as always, we warm you up with a few quick fire questions where all you can give me is one word answers. So, Coach, you are now playing the Marriott Minutes. The British Basketball League.
Exciting.
The British Basketball League rebrand.
Youthful.
Mike Tuck.
Consistency.
Jalen Pipkins.
Explosive.
Rodney Glasgow Jr.
Clutch.
Favorite away venue?
Copperbox.
Favorite NBA team?
Knicks.
Favorite NBA player?
Jimmy Butler.
Steve D'Agostino.
Crafty.
The new home of the Sheffield Sharks.
One of a kind.
Coach Atiba Lyons.
Honest.
Man, Coach, you smashed it. That's this week's Marriott Minute. Breathe. You can relax now.
I was just trying to think of some words that does things justice. You know, you don't want to undersell things.
I see you put some effort into that, and I'm not surprised that you picked Jimmy Butler. If anybody is new to the British Basketball League, and you didn't get a chance to watch Atiba play, you know, Jimmy Butler's style represent mentality, I should say, represents you perfectly, man.
Bully ball. Bully ball.
I always say to my guys here, like, if you think the league back in the 70s, 80s, 90s wasn't as good as now, Jimmy Butler is one of those players from that era. So if it works now, it would have kept working.
Yeah, amen. 100. Well, hey, man. Well, first, congratulations. I mean, you guys are playing some great basketball. You're 4-1 this month. And just to paint the pictures for the fans, is in the preseason predictions, myself, Ant Rowe picked you guys sixth. Mike Tuck picked you guys fourth. And he got a little bit of bias stick from that. But, I mean, when you think about it, you know, Newcastle, Bristol are playing in Europe, including London. And obviously, Leicester, you think they will just always be there. And then taking in consideration, Del Pesh, Rodney Glasgow out early with an injury. And all of a sudden, you look up and the Sheffield Sharks are third above those teams I just mentioned, except London. I mean, are you kind of surprised with the start that you guys have had?
You know, I would say it's hit or miss, because last year I had high expectations. We started out really flat, 0-4. So this year, I kind of tempered my expectations, just went in there and just approached it as, let's see what happens. I thought we were going to be a very strong side as far as just the balance of some youth and some experience. And yeah, I think it's a really good start. Even some of the losses we had, they easily could have went another way. We could have put ourselves in an even better position probably if we could take some possessions back. But No, I'm really happy with the start so far. I think it's put us in a good position going into Christmas. That December time kind of lets you know the lay of the land, and I think we're in a decent spot right now to make a good push to just keep improving.
Yeah, and you know, there's been some early teething problems from a lot of teams, injuries, and I'm not sure how much you listen to the show over the years, but one thing that Jay has always said about you guys is, was like, there's nothing flashy or fancy about the Sharks. They just consistent at being consistent, and they just going to always be there. I mean, how does that accurately describe your program?
I guess I'm biased, it's mine. But, you know, I think the way we play year in, year out with intensity and, you know, effort and, you know, the buy-in, I think that's what I'm most proud of. You know, you can say year in, year out, you know, but it is different players, it's different personalities, it's different egos, it's different, you know, motivations or expectations. And every year every coach deals with something different. So to have a team that's consistently tough, buy in, play hard, physical, is what I'm proud of.
Yeah, just to kind of jump in, like, I know we got Christmas around the corner, but Drew's definitely playing the elf on the shelf there. He's trying to be a little bit deviant. But for me, I think, like, I've said it before, I think people, fans of your guys, like, take offense to it. But I think it's really hard to have that longevity. Whereas if you're picking preseason predictions, like, I can't remember any time where you're going to put Sheffield Sharks near the bottom. In fact, you're probably going to predict them between 1 and 5. I think that's fair to say over the years, that's come through pretty strong. You know, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, going towards the end of last season, you saw something you really liked with that roster and that particular style of play. Was that in your mind going into this season, what you wanted to do? Because it looked like the start of last year, you know, you were a bigger team, and then you kind of went smaller, went quicker, little bit more exciting, which is getting away from the narrative of saying you guys are consistent. But, you know, adding a little bit more youth, like you just said, was that in the back of your mind going towards the end of the season?
Yeah, I think sometimes you, as a coach, you have the habit of maybe overcorrecting at times, especially, you know, the year before the previous season, 2 years prior, we were beat up a lot inside in the boards, and some teams got over on us just kind of getting some second chance points. And, I really wanted to shore that up and protect the foul trouble from the bigs. And I probably overshot that a little bit. The guys returning from the tail end of that last season, the probably the main kind of component that made me want to stick with that style of play, that it wasn't so much style of play as the guys that were in the system, Jaylon DeVerl in particular, because they were the newer ones, newer late additions. Really, really good, good guys, you know, understand what it is to be a good teammate, understand what it is to be, you know, professional, easily to coach, you know. So, and they wanted to get better, and I really, really, really preach that. Now I've been coaching as long as I have, I can appreciate those kind of key things rather than some other stuff maybe that, you know, I could have looked for maybe a bigger, more bigger wings or something, or, you know, something cosmetic. But I really appreciate just the personalities and how these guys are mentally.
Well, can we give the fans like a little bit of insight with regards to coaching, just how much high value that is on when you get good people in the building? You know, obviously, like, you know, we can talk about talent, but that's a prerequisite. You wouldn't be picking up the phone to those players if it wasn't for their talent. But like, how important it is to you building not only just winning games, but also building that culture. Like, where do you value that person or that personality?
I think the longer I've been doing it, the more years underneath my belt, and that generational gap kind of spreads a little bit. It gets harder sometimes to connect. So when I connect with a guy, a team, or players, and they have the kind of mentality and the approach to the game is, that's kind of, you know, really generationalist. They just all do what, you know, what we did and what people before us did. They go to the gym early, they lift, they, you know, they're good guys, they cheer for each other. I just want to go to work and enjoy it. You know, I want to enjoy who I'm coaching. I want to go to work and put my extra time in. I want to watch film with them and know that it's sinking in a positive way. I want to be able to talk to them. And I'm, like I said, I think I'm a very straight shooter. So if they can be receptive to that, it makes it easier for me. And then everyone has a better experience and tend to see it on the court.
And one thing that I can appreciate about you is that you're not afraid to tinker or pull the trigger if it's for the betterment of the team. And we all know that this is players' profession, and you don't want to, you know, take away a guy's dream. But at the end of the day, you have a responsibility to the organization and the fan base. So just give us a little perspective on, you know, your first swap out, you bring Kipper back, and then, you know, the newest acquisition of getting rid of swapping Allen out, who you look at his resume, and I think it's fair to say that he just kind of underperformed according to, you know, his resume. What was the reasons behind those two changes?
Allen, it was sometimes it changes, sometimes it's just better for both. Whether it feels like that, I've been a player, I've been on both sides of the coin, and sometimes I just know it's not quite a good fit for either one of us. I'm not going to bring the most out of you, or this style or system may not be the best for you. It's not an easy decision by any means. It's something that I definitely, you know, toil with and think about, and I try to adjust and make just before I make any kind of decision. I'll definitely try to adjust style of play or set calling or defensive scheme into guys. It's a little bit of just, it too doesn't fit. You know what I mean? It's a lot of times it's not a case of attitudes or personalities. If it's a case of attitude, it's even quicker probably. But when it's someone that I'm really, you see, just not quite over that hump and not playing to their potential, it's probably just not the right fit. And for them to go somewhere else, it usually works out better for them in the long run. It may not feel like that. It stings as a player. The ego gets hit. Most guys that we have these issues with always go on and they have a fruitful career.
I want to kind of jump in and talk about, we'd be remiss if we didn't bring up Mike Tuck into this conversation. And, you know, it's evident that you guys have a real bromance. I saw the Pilates online the other day. You know, Mike with his social media is not going to allow you to escape being seen doing that stuff. But obviously just a huge loss in the locker room. You know, how have you dealt with that kind of change? Was there already kind of a leadership change last year and it was kind of quite easy? Or is that the move with people like Kipper coming back and stuff like that? We know how big a personality he is, you know, Rodney Glasgow, Mr. Fashion himself. You know, was there already a changing of the guard, or do you miss having him in there?
Well, you know, that's why the word I used for him was consistency. I knew what I was going to get. You know, he's definitely someone that showed that for numerous years and was a exemplary player for us. But I think we do have the consistency. We have Rodney, who came in and as an older vet, and he kind of assumed that role rather quickly as far as just a voice and someone that would, off the court, do the small things of getting teams together and things of that nature. But also Bennett's been here a long time, and Bennett's starting to find his voice a little bit. Very, very... you know, he doesn't say a lot, but when he speaks, it speaks with volume. So, and the consistency and the character, it makes it a lot easier to kind of find that that locker room has a leader and a voice. It's sometimes it's still a work in progress at times. I think every season, because it's so fresh, you got to reestablish yourself and get that balance back. Whereas Tuck was here for so long, I think it was a much easier gig for him. But I'm sure Tuck would tell you differently early on. You probably faced the same thing these guys are facing. So, he's missed in a sense for me. But these young guys and these you know, riding these guys, they're stepping up, doing a great job. So, you know, it's pretty smooth transition.
Is he missing the game a lot? Do you find him sort of itching to be around it, or is he handling it, the transition, pretty well?
I think he's handling it pretty well. I mean, he's pretty busy with the marketing side of things for us. You know, he's very heavily involved in the business. So he's got a lot of work to do. He shouldn't be daydreaming too much. I think he, after that first year where you kind of, it's that panic of what you do after, right?
Yeah.
And now he's 2 years out. I think he's found his feet in now, and he knows, you know, his life after basketball, and he's making the most of it.
Yeah, let's stick with Rodney Glasgow, because obviously last year he signed a 3-year deal. You know, I Rodney's a former teammate of mine, so we speak often, and I saw him sticking around in Sheffield in the offseason, really grinding. What was your initial thoughts when obviously you got the news that he tore his Achilles? And then the follow-up to it is, last night this dude scored 17 points. I mean, did you envision that the return would be so quick after such a catastrophic injury?
It's weird because as a coach, when you're recruiting, at the time he did it was like just the beginning of recruitment season. So it was a tough decision to figure out how to proceed. It's a tricky injury, isn't it? Achilles, that little bit older. You don't know how it's going to recover. It's going to be, you know, Rodney's going to be diligent. You know, he's going to do what he has to do, take care of his body, eat the right way. He's very, very disciplined and professional like that. So if you knew if he could get back early, he will. I think he's been practicing for a week and a half now, and he's looked good. You know, he's not, you know, you're waiting to see what the effects are going to be, and, you know, if it's too fast and you're trying to be cautious, and he just kept being consistent in practice. He's playing really well. It's weird, though. I'm happy for him. I think it's fantastic. I know that's a great kind of, we've all been hurt, and to come back and have that kind of return is what you all kind of mentally juice yourself up for before the game. And all week you kind of think, man, if I get my chance, I'm going to do this. So you know how good that feels as a player when you hit on all cylinders in the game in your home crowd. I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised because, you know, he does what he does. He makes those shots consistently. He's done it for a long time for us. He gets to his spots and he knows what to do. So it's weird because he's how talented he is and how consistent he is. You're kind of not surprised, but at the same time, you are surprised just because of the injury and stuff like that. But very happy for him. I think he did a phenomenal job, and I think it's a great kind of relief for the team, for everyone to kind of just see him go out there, and we can move the next thing now.
How was just kind of moving across to now you have your own home, your own arena, your own facility? Just kind of talk to us about, you know, how big that is, not just for the organization. I think that's fairly obvious, but for yourself as a coach now, you know, this is a legacy piece. This is something that maybe seems so far away, you know, when you first started, and now you have your own facility, your own place to work with your players. Like, how big's that been for you personally on that journey?
I mean, it's a long time coming, a lot of work done behind the scenes. You know, we started probably almost 10 years ago talking about looking to find buildings to repurpose and, you know, if we could get in the ground floor that way maybe, and because building a superstructure from the ground up and finding the land is going to be difficult. And that skips another idea to another idea and investments. And you have no idea how long and how many different variations of this building and how we've funded it we've seen. So to get to this level and get to this point has been just, you know, surreal. It's extremely gratifying. It's hard to not come to work without a smile. It's hard to not pull up and not think, oh, I did this. That's really good. We did this. You know what I mean? We believed, we sacrificed and achieved. So it's a great accomplishment. Sarah, Yuri, you know, the chairman and the managing director, they've been just plugging along and just making things happen that definitely were counted out and told we were unrealistic. So to fight those kind of non-believers or whatever you want to call it, doubters, very proud of everyone involved. And from the player standpoint and coaching, the guys, they come in, they come in around 9:30, and I mean, sometimes they're not leaving until 1, 2 o'clock. They're here, they're laughing, they're joking around, they get food. We got a TV in the locker room. They're watching TV. They're watching NBA. They're watching UFC. They're getting treatment. And that environment, and Drew, you've probably experienced a little bit more just because you've been on some teams with a bit of a venue beforehand. But as a coach here, I haven't had a locker room culture, really. I haven't seen that. You know, in college we have it, but here is the first time I'm kind of seeing that. And that's such a huge part of, you know, just knowing who your team is, knowing, being informed, being comfortable. It breaks down the walls a lot quicker. Guys start to bond a lot quicker. And it makes it enjoyable for the wider staff because they interface and see people that instead of being your office is 10 miles away from the arena, you only see each other on game days and you see each other for 10 minutes after. Everyone's talking and speaking and having a laugh. So it's just made a more enjoyable experience. The culture is really growing. We're already what we are, but I think it's just really put it all nice in a neat bow now, one place.
Yeah, no, that's cool. You're absolutely right. And the biggest thing is that, especially for younger players, because vets already having routine themselves and a life, some with families, but it gives those guys somewhere to hang out besides a nightclub, right? Because You know, that's mm-hmm. normally where players are going to hang out. And so they can hang out at the locker room. That's just going to bring those guys together even quickly. But finally, for me, you know, there was something put out as you guys open the doors that it's going to increase your revenue by 40%. Just in the short term, where does the Sheffield Sharks prioritize that extra, you know, disposable income?
Well, we just got to keep the lights on first and foremost. You got to make sure, you know, we got a mortgage, we got to pay. You got water and heat bills, bro, when you got a, you know, electric bill ain't cheap when you're putting on a boxing events for 3,000 people and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you constantly got to reinvest, you know, you got to reinvest to the business. You have to have a sink fund. You have to make sure you can take care of any kind of unexpected, which there will be a lot of unexpected. We've been here for, I don't even know now, let's say mid-August, we were kind of in here, but not officially till October. And we've already seen so many things we've had to address and bring people back in and contract. You're like, you just think you're building, it's done, it's not done. it's always something. So, you know, that's first and foremost. And then, you know, looking ahead as far as performance and the team, you know, the arena, to be fair, is technically a separate business, so it's not the same thing. So it's not like everything that happens in the arena is the Sharks. It's got its own kind of whole life form going on there. But the Sharks is definitely looking forward to growing the club, you know, reinvesting in the performance. And then, you know, see maybe Europe in a year or two, see how that looks. You know, we're not in a rush to maybe make those jumps until we make sure the business is solidified and we're comfortable and confident.
Love it. Well, you know, just one final thing from me. You know, I'm going to try and jog your memory a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, you could call this, Drew, you could call this Alaska look back. But okay. For me, there's always teams throughout the years from every team in the BBL that I can recall being like my favorite team, like the team mm-hmm. that I just love to watch. And that 2010-2011 team, you know, Steve D'Agostino, Ryan Patton, Marcus Stout, young Mike Tuck, the big fella, Paul Williams, don't forget Olu. And then obviously yourself, you know, you were transitioning between player coach. You made that decision pretty quickly, I know. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a geeky, indulgent question from my point of view. Like, why did it work so well? Because it was before its time. You know, now we see small ball all the time and you've got the Golden State Warriors, mm-hmm. You know, the ones that come to mind in terms of that playing style. It was very different to what we were seeing at that time in that era. Mm-hmm. And also as well, like I always wondered like why teams were not able to take advantage of Steve and Ryan's size as well, you know? And I just want a little insight into that was, you know, was it their fierce competitive nature? Did you hide them in a system? Like, just talk to me a little bit about that team.
Yeah, that was a great team. I really enjoyed that team. I always look back and think I probably could have got a little more out of them with experience. I was still a young coach. To be fair, we lost to some really talented teams when we did lose. So I'm not disrespecting anybody, but I just felt like, when I look back, that team had a lot of guns on it, and I so probably fun. Didn't get them all firing at the same time consistently, but did really well, won something, so really proud of that. But they were uber talented. I mean, the way that we would do shooting games, and I'd be like, okay, we're here too long. They're not missing. It's just like, it's ridiculous. Like, it's, you know, you got, you know, first one to miss, lose it, and Ryan, Steve, and Marcus would just be like, just here forever. And it was no sign of slowing down. The way they shot the ball, the percentage they shot it at was phenomenal. Then Paul was just a handful, could pass, left, right, hook, nasty throw elbows, just a dog on the block, which I love. Then Olu was scrappy and, you know, take out whoever your best scorer was, you know, Olu was going to be good for that. And then Tuck was coming off the bench with his consistency, hitting his, you know, step backs and, I'm trying to think who else I'm missing. Our team was a good team. And then I was just there to pass and screen. That was my job, and I was happy to do it. You know, run Ryan off some screens, hit him, hit Steve for some shots.
They never stopped moving, did they? They never stopped moving, especially Steve, yeah. But, you know, because Ryan had the ball in his hands a little bit more than Steve. But I just remember that team never stopping moving. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, we had Paul down in Plymouth, so I know how good he was. He was a legitimate throwback. He wasn't trying to develop his game any other way. He was like, I'm going to kill you with these weapons. But they just never stopped moving.
No. Yeah, that was easy player coaching job for me. Just set screens and pass. I can do that. But as far as hiding them in defensive schemes, yeah, we did work on a little bit of like just our baseline snap and how we pull guys out and triple switch. I think triple switching was probably not done as commonly as it was now, as I probably did it back then. I don't think it was as much a thing. But we did a lot of that stuff. But like you said, they were dogs and tough. The term Ryan isn't going to be post up easy. He's not going to like that. he's a nice guy, funny as anything, but he's not like soft at all. And Steve was the same way. They were fierce competitors. They were grit. And why I always liked smaller guards at that time was I just knew that no matter their game translates, they've been small. I don't need a 6'4" guard that can only finish when he gets to the free throw line 10 times. Like, small guards know how to finish at any level because they've been small. What's 6'5", 6'7", 6'8", whatever. You know, it's what you played against your whole life. So I always liked that at that time, was just having small guards because it translates really well to BBL, someone that's that talented. So very fun team, and great memories with those guys. Really, really fun group.
Yeah, Atiba, man, it was great to catch up with you. We've been wanting to get you on here for a while and felt like the time was right with you guys doing really well. I wanted to showcase that and highlight the arena and all the great things that's happening in Sheffield. So keep doing what you're doing, and that's being dynamic offensively and still being a killer defensively, man. Congratulations on all your success. Yeah.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks, Coach. Thanks a lot. Great job with the podcast.
Finally, Sheffield Sharks fan. Jay, it was fun. It was great to finally get Coach Atiba Lyons on the show.
Yeah, I love talking to Coach at the best of times, but just being able to geek out at the end there with one of my favorite teams from the BBL history was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, let's move things on to the league. I mean, I tweeted this last night, man. We have so much to talk about. So we apologize to our producer who's currently producing the show in America on airplanes in Los Angeles. Lucky for him, but his commitment to the show. Shout out to Josh. But let's start in Plymouth. You know, this team has made two changes with Spencer Levi, Terrell Green, who have been upgrades to the roster. Clearly better, but you know, the takeaway from this weekend is they just can't finish. You know, they lose to Manchester at the buzzer on a missed layup, 91-90, and then they lose at home against Surrey, 65-63. Jay, why can't our hometown team finish the deal, man?
I think it's interesting. I think just because you've upgraded a roster, it doesn't give you a time scale on how that's going to fit. You know, so if anyone's a good example of it's Newcastle right now, they are rolling, but it's taken them probably longer than they thought it was going to take to get into a good position. So I think, you know, Plymouth are just a byproduct of, you know, just needing a little bit of time and patience. You know, we saw how they came out of the gates and you know, they got a great win against London, and you thought maybe they could take that forward, but it just hasn't quite worked. And I mean, we are talking about the minutia right now. You know, we're not talking about panic stations. We're not talking about, you know, there need to be mass changes or anything crazy like that. I mean, it's just literally little, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's at this point. You know, I don't think I've ever like wanted to give LVC such a big hug than after that layup. You know, like, I know he will just want that back so badly. I mean, you could tell afterwards, like, he was in a bit of shock. You know, it he couldn't even react with like anger. You know, like there was that much. So, you know, it's just little things, and it's gonna take time. You know, just because you've inserted two really good pieces that I think fit really well with the roster. And I like the roster as well. Like, I look around, you know, I like Atwood a lot. You know, Tyler's game has translated really, really well into the into the BBL. And, you know, LVC's leading that team very, very well. So I think it's just going to have to be, sadly for Plymouth fans, because they seem really impatient for success. I can feel like on Twitter that they're just, you know, they're at the end of their tether. It's just going to have to take a little while longer, sadly. These things happen.
Yeah, man, I just think they have a case of the yips. You know, when you're not used to winning, you kind of get in that moment and it's like, uh-oh, or here we go again. You know, mm-hmm. Anytime there's any adversity. And I think that's the case for Manchester and Surrey as well. If you watch Surrey and Plymouth, both of those teams want to throw the game away late. In particular with Plymouth, Taylor Johnson comes down, turnover. Don't even get a shot up. They get a stop. They come back down. LVC uncharacteristically gets ripped from behind. They don't get a shot up. Game over. And then if you rewind to Friday night, I mean, Manchester and Plymouth, I was there commentating on the game. And that was just two teams that just shows exactly why they are where they are. I mean, if you go back and watch those last 5 minutes of the game, it was like two teams in a boxing match punching themselves, like not wanting to win the game. You talk about the amount of offensive fouls in that game, 7 or 8. And then, you know, the final play of that game, it just shows you a true reflection of both of those teams. You know, Nick Lewis goes to the free throw line with a chance to ice it, 81% on the season. He misses both. Plymouth get the rebound.
Yeah.
How in the hell does LVC Dusha get in behind the defense on a free throw? Like, that shit, that's basketball one-on-one. The guys at the half-court line should say, hey, I got him, and you stand behind LVC Dusha. So no idea how that happens, but Atwood gets the ball, one dribble, throws it over the top, a perfect touchdown pass to LVC Dusha, catches it in stride off of two feet, and didn't even hit the backboard. I'm just like, oh. I mean, geez, man. It was
I just felt for him. I mean, you're right. It's just at the bottom there, it just is the devil is in the detail. You can't escape those little bits of detail that you have to do to win games. And at the moment, it very much feels like watching that bottom cluster group that they're very much scared to win it. You know, they're afraid to go and win a game. Instead, they're trying to play not to lose. And in that mentality, oof, it's hard to turn it around.
Yep, you're right. That playing not to lose, playing not to win is always a recipe for disaster. But, you know, staying on Plymouth and to make matters worse, I actually don't know what the title of Carl Heslop is. Is it GM? Is it owner? Part owner, I assume. Let's go with owner. He steps down in a long letter. And if you haven't seen that, go to the Plymouth City Patriots Twitter account and you will be able to read that. But he steps down, and Jay, just your initial reactions. What is the legacy of Carl Heslop in his short tenure there?
I think it'll be looked back as one with respect. You know, at the end of the day, he stepped in and helped to save that franchise. You know, it was steeped in difficulties. You know, that there had to be the name change. The venue worries, et cetera. So he took on a lot, and we need to remember with Carl was, you know, Carl didn't have any previous experience within professional sports, you know, like, so to jump in that arena the way that he did, and I feel like, you know, took a lot of flack at times as well. I think took some bravery. So I think his legacy will be seen as an owner. I feel like bridged a very difficult period of time for the club in that city. You know, I think that he stepped in and showed a lot of strength and character to hold it for that short period of time to save it. You know, so I'm very thankful to Carl. I've always been really, really open. Is my love is for the Raiders, and it changed to the Patriots, and it took me a while to really get through that. But I'm sure it took everybody a while to get their heads around it. And he can walk away having felt like he put everything into it. And you know, like he addressed in the letter, he feels like now it is the time for it to go to somebody else or the league or the city to kind of step up and help cement that franchise in Plymouth. So I hope he's done that. And you know, I'm thankful to Carl. You know, appreciate him stepping into an arena he never needed to do. He didn't need to do that. He didn't need to put himself in that position. And I know I saw firsthand behind the scenes with us going down to film, and you know, my son plays in the youth development and stuff like that. He was as hands-on, as committed as anybody could have been. So you know, hats up to Carl, and let's see what the future of the franchise looks like moving forward.
Yeah, you said a lot of great things there. And I think the biggest thing he'd be remembered for is, you know, his strength, his guts, because without him, you know, serving as that bridge, I think it's safe to say there's no Plymouth franchise. There's nine teams in the British Basketball League. They're done. So, you know, I don't see why anyone would have anything bad to say about Carl. I reached out to him directly and just asked him exactly the reasons why. And he said he has a few businesses, but his main construction business has tripled in size and needed his focus for the past year. I've advised the league that I couldn't do both prior to the season, and workload has only increased, so he had no choice but to step down. And then also I asked him, you know, what are you most proud of? And he says, keeping professional basketball in the city for another 3 years and increasing youth basketball participation in Plymouth by 350%. And then just a couple of other questions that I asked for the fans were, you know, what's the plan for the organization in the short term? And, you know, he said staff reporting directly to the BBL whilst handover process continues. And I asked him who takes over. And he says BBL would have to answer this one because he assumes it depends on timescales and if they're looking for a buyer. And then I asked him a question, Jay, that's been floating around everywhere is, you know, what role does the league have exactly with the franchise? And he says the league owns 100% of the Patriots, so therefore have full control. Is there anything that you'd like to respond to out of that, those messages?
No, I think, like you said, the challenges is obvious. Like the biggest challenge that they have currently that's threatening that franchise is venue. And it's how they solve that. And I think, you know, the emergence of the Plymouth Raiders, the history that the Plymouth Raiders have, and the fact that they're now playing out of the Life Center, which is probably one of the most viable situations if the council played their part, makes things really, really difficult with that franchise. You know, I think that if you're within basketball, you knew that the league had taken control of that franchise, and that Carl was, you know, the mainstay in the city that was able to save it. And as I said, every time I've spent time with Carl, you know, I thought he was a great bloke with his heart in the right place. And just interested to see what the next move is, you know, what the next communication comes out about a franchise that we both know and love, and we want to see, you know, British Basketball League standard franchise staying in that city.
Yeah, well, a lot of questions to be answered. And like you mentioned, Jay, a franchise that means a lot to us, a city, and we would like to see them stay. But the way the league is moving now, things is moving really fast. And so we'll see what happens. We'll leave it there, guys. But, you know, let's move on down south to Surrey, a team that Plymouth did face on Sunday. And I picked these guys to finish seventh in the league just because, you know, with the experience that they brought in, with the guys that they were able to retain, I thought that they would see an uplift in their play. And, you know, they had a shaky start picking up things as of recently, and they sit currently at eighth in the standings. And Scott Horsborough, hopefully I pronounced that correctly, asked us, Jay, where do we see Scorchers come playoff time?
Right now, like it, exactly where they are. You know, I just think it's really difficult to make a playoff run in this league. You know, the top to bottom, these teams are tough. You know, so I haven't seen enough from them to feel like that they can challenge those playoff positions right now. And it's really difficult to kind of analyze why. You know, like I think, you know, they've got an experienced GM. I mean, maybe not experienced within the role, but experienced within basketball. I think they've got a great coach. You know, I enjoy listening to him on the, you know, when he does the comms. And I think that they've got some really good veteran pieces. So, do they need to shake things up a little bit? Is that in their DNA even to do that? We will see, but I can only see, but some changes to that roster to be able to help them compete. You know, they're gonna be right there with that bottom group, and they're gonna compete. And you know, they stole that game down in Plymouth. It wasn't fun to watch. It was a bit of a throwback in terms of scoreline. You know, I think they're competing right now not to win the wooden spoon, personally.
Yeah, I agree with you. They're right where they need to be. They are competitive. It's very rare that they're going to get blown out. Obviously, Newcastle was able to beat them pretty good this weekend at home, which is very rare for Surrey. Normally, those games are competitive. You know, they've had guys in and out of the lineup, but I think their roster is equipped to handle that because they have such a deep roster. You know, their only issue is that you watch them and like there's like five or six times during the game you watch it and you say, "What the f- are you doing?" And you can see the look on Lloyd Gardner's face. You can see it on Dan Clark's face. I mean, I've been there live and seen it. And it's just like sometimes they just do stupid shit. But they're competitive, and they just, I really think they're a team that just needs to dissect film. Constant. They need some Fab Florinoy film sessions. I'm talking about 3 hours at a time. And because there's mistakes that could be correctable because it's just bonehead plays. And that's the only thing that I could chalk it up to. You know, they when they get hot, they're dangerous. Wang, he shows you flashes, but he's a main culprit when he's on the ball that you're just like putting your hand on your forehead. And especially when he's at the point, but
he's a frustrating player.
I
find him quite frustrating. He can be a game winner some days, and then like you said, like what are you doing? You know, it's difficult.
Yeah, I think for them, the realistic goal for Surrey, because I think making the playoffs would be success because they haven't in so many years. Their aim should be seventh, because you're finishing eighth, you're getting waxed by London, right? But if you finish seventh, there's not one team that I don't think that Surrey can beat in a three-game series in a playoff time if they're firing at all cylinders, if they're healthy. And so right now, they're three losses out of that seventh place. Right now, Leicester sits in seventh, but that should be the aim. They just need to go on a run and fight for seventh. And I think that would be a really successful season to see what happens, because if you finish eight, you already know what's going to happen. But
nobody wants eighth. But like the difficulty is then the 2 through 7 are getting better, you know, or they're making moves to be better. So it's an interesting one for them. Like I hope they do it. I think the fan base really deserve that, and I was excited with, as I said, GM, coach, veteran players, you know, Justin Robinson, Andrew Lawrence, you know, Josh Steele, you know, he's an experienced player, even though he's still young. I don't know, like, you know, it's tough to get into that top seven, I think.
Yeah, there you go, Scott. Just don't finish eighth, and happy days for your Surrey Scorchers. But let's move down to my Newcastle Eagles, who are all of a sudden, I mean, the first couple of weeks, we were coming on here keeping it 100, hammering them, telling them like it was. Now, all of a sudden, one of the hottest teams in the league, rolling, healthy for the first time, 7 in a row, including, you know, European play. And on Twitter, let's see if we can find him, actually. What's his name? Steven. Steven says, he at the Drew and Jay podcast and say, "You dang near owe Larry Austin an apology." And so I came on and I said, wait a minute. Did you listen to my point? I never said that Eagles were better without Larry Austin. I said, subtraction by addition. They needed to miss a player just to find the pecking order. And once he gets back in the lineup, they're going to be even better. And so Steven said, No, not you, Drew. I'm talking about your co-host. He said, make sure that your praise is just as loud as your criticism, Jay. Huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, like, I don't understand where the apology comes from. Like, I think potentially Newcastle can pick up the phone and say thank you very much, because they've gone on a roll. because they've able to get a little bit of space and a little bit of time to figure out where all these stars fit. And they're starting to slot in. When you see them rolling, they are rolling for a reason, because people are starting to find their roles. I've said it before, Josh Ward Hibbert, for example, is a massive piece.
Balling.
All those pieces together. You can say the same for Defoe. People have got to listen to the podcast, and they got to listen carefully. Like, Larry Austin Jr. is one of my favorite players. I love watching him play. And if you want to go back and you want to go watch basketball, like actually see what's happening on the court, you could see that he wasn't entirely sure where he fit in. He didn't entirely know where to find places to attack. I was there live watching them when they played Bristol Flyers, and I could see that, yes, he was a little bit hurt too, that there's another side to those things, but I could see he didn't entirely know when to be Larry Austin. Which Larry Austin, when he's being Larry Austin, is great. Nobody's saying that he's not a good player. And guess what? He's going to be even better for being able to sit there and figure out, like, okay, here's where I can be aggressive. Here's where I can be myself. And one of the other things that I love about Larry Austin is he can get out of people's way and go find his offense being scrappy, go and get those things off the board. I've seen him bullying forwards before, so he's going to be just fine. So if you want me to be loud, you're welcome. And I'm really excited for how hot this Eagles team is. And now Larry is inserted into that lineup. He's going to be even more integral to them going on those bigger runs and challenging in this league. So there was no criticism. And it's definitely given Coach Doodle a little bit of time to figure out his roster. That's it.
And more importantly, because I've been in this situation before, when you put a talented team together, in particular in the 2007-08 season when we became Airwaves at Plymouth, and we all of a sudden had this influx of cash, and Gary Stronach brought in all these big namers, this is what's happening.
And Big Kit, too.
Yeah, way too damn big. When I see those pictures now, I'm like, what the hell are we thinking? There's no way I'm a 4XL, my God. But this is what's happened, ladies.
Baggy, but not like that.
But this is what's happened, ladies and gentlemen, is that all these stars come together, and they come to Newcastle for the first couple practices, and everybody's looking around, and they're looking at their own resumes, and everyone's resume can rise to the top. And the first thing you're asking yourself is, who's going to be the man? And everybody who's there is thinking, I'm going to be the man, that because that's what you're supposed to think as a competitive and a professional basketball player. And so all that's happened is it's taken time for guys to figure out, you know what? I'm not actually going to be the man on this team. And it's clearly Jordan Johnson. And one guy that we haven't talked about who I really think this has happened for is Taj Green. Like, and I noticed it in the European game that they won away, is that for the first time, he just bought in and said, you know what? Forget that. I'm not going to try to be the man. I'm just going to go and do the dirty work. Like, I'm going to hustle. I'm going to get on the floor. I'm going to fight for loose balls. And you know what? And I can get mine that way. And that has really been it. And Larry Austin going out, and now he's back. And you look at the London game. How did he get his? By cutting, getting in transition, doing the dirty work. You know, Jordan Johnson is doing all the pretty work. When he gets fluttered, he gives it to Ricky McGill, and that's the pecking order, and that's why Newcastle's playing great. And so, been there before. Teams just need time to figure out who the dude is, and then everybody else can fall in line. But, you know, let's move on, Jay, to the final thing before we wrap up today is, I don't know if you caught this banter between the Cheshire Phoenix and the Gladiators, but, man, this was fun to follow. Stuart Hodge, I don't want to assume everyone's seen it. The Cheshire Phoenix beat the Gladiators away. So then they put up a social media post saying, post that on your documentary, which went viral in our community. Everyone commented on it. It was hilarious. Stuart Hodge, who's the former play-by-play guy for Caledonia, he says, this is some absolutely great social trolling, a lot of meant-to-be impartial pundits reacting in a way that's not entirely benefiting, in my honest opinion. So I saw that and I had to go look back and see who he was talking about, because the only pundits that I saw reply to it was, you know, Mike Tuck, and he just said aggressive. And Tahir, who, let's see if I could bring this up real quick. But as I'm bringing this up, Jay, like, what's your overall thoughts on this social media beat? Do you, is this fun for you, or is this too far?
I mean, honestly, like, I don't care. It is my honest answer to it. Like, I don't pay that much attention to it. I found it funny. I thought it was a good reply by Cheshire, but the one problem that you have by doing that is you poke the bear, right? And they had to go straight back into that atmosphere, having done what they done, you know. And don't get me wrong, this ain't players doing this, is it? This is the media team trying to create some following. And I just think it's good for the league. What I will say is, you know, I saw you rallying the troops too, Mr. Lasker. Don't leave yourself out of Twitter. What's I know that you about? Were sort of saying, oh, I hope they've got that reply ready. and, you know, I just imagine behind the scenes, these are gladiators, right? You know, they got their shields ready. They got their swords ready. They're ready to puff their chest about that win. And then the weak sauce comes into play. Oh, and man. Just the reply was just not there. Like, I feel like it was somebody that was sat there thinking, I want to stick it to him. And they've written their list down and they can't see anything that they really like. And in the end, they just succeed and just, you know, they just reply, right? You know, it felt like it was kind of like right back at you. You know, it just wasn't all that good. So I think they missed a trick there. But honestly, I just think it's some harmless fun, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, who, like, seriously, like, who cares, man? Like, okay, yeah, I even saw Dave Forrester tweet about it as well. Like, who cares about this poking the bear stuff? Like, look, if you need to read a Twitter response from an admin sitting behind a desk or a phone to get you motivated to beat a team, then shame on you. Shame on the Gladiators. Like, if it took that for them to put their flag in the sand and say, you know what, forget these Cheshire Phoenix, we're going to beat them, then that's a shame on you. Like, I don't buy all this, like, poking the bear stuff. Like, it's stupid. But, I mean, Inter Stewart, who I've spoken to before, I mean, I read Tahir's response and I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And my response exactly, because I don't know who he was talking to, so I'm just assuming, is I tweeted that, filling myself, and that was me referencing Cheshire Phoenix, and then I put, they whooping ass and taking names, and that's exactly what happened. How is that impartial? And I'm just assuming, I don't know if you're talking about, that's what they're doing. Like, that's not impartial, and he might not be talking about me, but I'm just speaking in general. Like, that's what the Cheshire Phoenix doing. And then the second part of it is, look, man, I'm watching British basketball from Thursday to Sunday. And like, as a fan, not even as an analyst needing to get, you know, myself prepared for my role, but I'm watching it for my own enjoyment. And guess what? I want to be entertained. And if I'm not going to be entertained by the product, because I think it's safe to say every game isn't entertaining, right? Like, that is a fact. I need to be entertained somewhere else. And so if it takes the social media teams to entertain us, then I need that. Like, come on, lighten up, people. Golly.
Well, just keep chirping, Mr. Lasker. That is all we've got for Hot Topics. And as we move on, we finish out with Game of the Week. Is there anything that you're looking at, Mr. Lasker? And I haven't put mine down on the script today, so you can't steal mine.
Oh, wow. I never look at yours anyway. Maybe we just, you know, aligned, but
maybe we're just vibing. Yeah,
that's all, we're just vibing, man. I'm looking at the schedule now because I haven't looked, but what stands out to me is, okay, I got one for you. For me, it's Caledonia and London. Like, Caledonia comes back to the Copper Box, where we saw that second game on Sky, and, you know, Gladiators got off to a great start, but then got waxed off the floor. And for me, I want to see growth. You know, how much have you grown? Because the Lions are the measuring stick. It should be for the Gladiators. And we want to see how much your team has grown since you've gone and played the Europe Cup, since you've had a lot more time together. You know, where you at now?
Exciting. Let's keep an eye out for that. For me, I'm going to pick Bristol at home to Sheffield Sharks. You know, Bristol losing a little bit of form, but still up there. And, you know, Sheffield building some momentum. So looking forward to those two clashing, that is for sure. And then before we leave, we have a new sponsor to announce. We are building some fantastic partnerships. This one will be fun-filled and giveaways galore as we welcome Hoopin' and Lootin' to the pod, the UK's number one jersey destination and home of the Basketball Creatives Platform, a celebration of basketball cultures and entrepreneurs in the UK. You can shop all things basketball at hoopinandlootin.com and follow the socials for updates on stock, basketball news, and content. If you have been following our socials, Elliot, you've been slacking a little bit. Let's go. You will know we are going to choose a player a week. It's for you guys to send in nicknames. We'll pick a winner each week and carry that to the end of the month where Elliot at Hoopin' and Lootin' will choose a prize winner. This week, we're taking a big bite. We're sticking with the Sheffield Sharks and we are going with Jalen Pipkins. You know he is flying and soaring through the air, so there should be plenty of nicknames going. So get your answers on all things socials. Anyway, that's it from me this week. Another great episode. Thank you, as always, for the support. And if you think your brand would benefit with some love on the pod, jump in our DMs. Until then, Drew, lead us out.
Man, Jay Pipkins is slowly becoming one of my favorite players in the league. So that timing is spot on. But yeah, guys, thanks again for your ears. Social media teams, keep up the banter. We need it. Fans, keep up the questions, keep up the we need all of that. All of that is part of it, of what we need to continue to grow this league and giving us talking points here on the pod. Appreciate you guys all out there. We'll see you guys next week, same time, same place here on the Drew and Jay podcast. Have a great week. Peace.